Welcome to the ACCP Postgrads Podcast, a podcast for residents by residents. My name is Tanner Melton, and I am the current ACCP Resident Advisory Committee Chair and the current PGY2 in solid organ transplant at Mayo Clinic Hospital in Rochester, Minnesota. Today, we are joined by Dr. Garrett Schramm, who is currently the Senior Director of the Mayo Clinic School of Continuous Professional Development. Garrett completed his PGY1 and PGY2 residency training at Barnes Jewish in St. Louis, Missouri, and went on to become an ICU pharmacist at Mayo Clinic Hospital in Rochester, Minnesota, prior to becoming the Director of Pharmacy, Education, and Academic Affairs at the same facility. Garrett has been heavily involved in national organizations, most recently being the president of MSHP, and currently serves as the immediate past president for MSHP. Garrett has also been a part of the Emerge from the Crowd program with ACCP for over 10 years. We are very happy to have Garrett with us today, and we'll be discussing the topic of career advancement in pharmacy. Garrett, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
Great, Tanner. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here and to kind of share my pharmacy journey.
Definitely. We have some questions that we've curated from myself and other committee members, so thank you to everyone that's contributed. And we'll start with just our first question to get to know about Garrett's journey a little bit more. Can you tell us a little bit about your pharmacy journey to this point?
Yeah, absolutely. And so like any pharmacist you included, my pharmacist journey is more of a winding road and not necessarily a straight line. So it started actually in my undergrad degree. So I was at the University of South Dakota completing a bachelor's degree in chemistry and mathematics. And one day I was actually walking through the student union and made eye contact with an individual at an exhibitor, like a recruitment booth. And it was a pharmacist from South Dakota State University College of Pharmacy. And I made that eye contact, Tanner. And I was like, oh, geez, now I got to talk to that person. So I walked up to this individual, started discussing. And about 15 minutes later, this individual, her name is Dr. Deborah Farber, said, you know, why don't you actually come and shadow me at my practice in a small community in South Dakota? And so at that point, I kind of feel compelled. I had to do it because I, you know, stopped by and talked to her. And honestly, it was a life-changing experience. I went and shadowed Dr. Farber. And the thing that just immediately struck me about that entire experience was how all the doctors and the nurses immediately went to her as a source of truth, as a subject matter expert. And not knowing anything about pharmacy, I was just blown away at like that individual was looked at as the source of truth by so many people on the healthcare team. And so Deb was extremely influential to me, wrote me a letter of recommendation to get into pharmacy school, which honestly, I had never in a million years thought about. And so I got into pharmacy school at SDSU. And then, you know, throughout that 4 years that for the last 4 years of pharmacy school, I actually, you know, made additional relationships. I actually worked as an overnight pharmacy technician at a community hospital in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I met Tom Johnson, who would then go on to become an ASHP president. And that's really where my love of critical care came from, is Tom Johnson. One thing led to another. I ended up in St. Louis for two residencies. I did a PGY2 in critical care. And there I met my program director, Scott Misek. And honestly, Scott helped me grow not only personally, but professionally. He helped turn me into a clinician, an educator, a researcher. And then from there, I actually accepted a position. I was a medical ICU pharmacist at Mayo Clinic initially. Within about a year of my role, I actually started funding 20% of my own job. So I had done industry-related research and, you know, generated some dollars doing that. And then a year or two into my ICU career at Mayo, I started funding that and did my research during the day, so 20% of my job. And so that was pretty pivotal. But within 4 years of coming to Mayo, the PGY1 RPD position opened up. And with that position, you also had to be the director of education. And so not only being an RPD, but overseeing all the other residency programs. So I actually had to walk away from clinical practice in order to take that position. So it was full pharmacy education. And so I did that for the better part of 15 years. You know, we went from having 6 PGY1 and PGY2 programs at Mayo Clinic. And when I left, we were actually up to 18. Started a nationally accredited pharmacy tech program, built a pharmacy education center, and then also got my foot in the door in continuing education. I actually helped bring ACPE continuing ed credit to Mayo Clinic. And so that was my connection to the School of Continuous Professional Development. And, you know, I think there's a good lesson in there. You know, I volunteered my time to have Mayo become an ACPE accredited CE provider. And then here we are 10 years after that, and I'm the director of the school that I brought ACPE credit into. So kind of full circle. I think it's extremely rewarding now. I'm a pharmacist. I don't work in the Department of Pharmacy, but I'm in the administration side of Mayo Clinic. But I find it really exciting, you know, to look back. And honestly, I feel like I've got my dream job now. So it's pretty neat.
That's amazing to hear, Garrett. And thank you for sharing so much of your story with us and being able to draw that out, because I feel like you've had a lot of, as you kind of said earlier, twists and turns in your journey that is not as linear as what you might expect for most career paths or even pharmacy as a whole. When you're a little P1 thinking about what you want to do, I wouldn't have expected any of this to happen to me if I were in your position. So I can understand the twists and turns.
I think honestly, Tanner, after I graduated residency, I thought I was going to be an ICU pharmacist for like the next 30 or 35 years. And so you can imagine 4 years into this experience and all of a sudden there's like this career change. And honestly, I think, you know, probably all of you are thinking, it's like, geez, like, was that hard to leave the clinical practice? And admittedly, at the time, it kind of was. It was a little bit scary. It was unknown. And I'm sure my colleagues, you know, who were witnessing this probably thought I was crazy, but I knew right away. I knew I always wanted to be a residency program director based off of the influence Scott Misak and others had on me. So I knew it was the right move at the time. But I admittedly initially was worried that, you know, what does this mean from a practice standpoint?
Definitely. And I can say, at least in my short career so far, knowing some people who have switched from clinical to the partial manager positions or even moving to a full-time managerial or education-focused position, having those conversations, and that's always a concern, but there's always something great with that new journey as well. And so from working with you just in the year, I would say that you've left an impact on me as well to have that as an opportunity going forward.
Yeah, it's a great message, honestly, of, you know, for residents, so whether it's a PGY1 residency or a PGY2 in addition to that, it just opens up so many opportunities that you just can't imagine, you know, for the rest of your career. So it's one residency is great, two is better, but most important is do some residency training.
Definitely. And I think that leads into the next question that we had, just as a very easy streamline, is you've been presented with a lot of opportunities, or you've had a lot of these changes that have happened in your career. How did you go about finding or creating these opportunities that you've been presented with?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to even individuals I've mentioned already, but I think every opportunity that I've been afforded, Tanner, honestly has to do with the connection to the mentors that I've had. So Deb Farber, Tom Johnson, Scott Misak, and a slew of other mentors I've had in my professional career. To be honest, I don't think I necessarily sought out new opportunities in my career. I feel like they almost kind of found me. But I think they found me because of the relationships I formed with those mentors. As far as future opportunities, I think those are probably planted many years in advance, whether you know it or not, before they actually come to fruition. You know, a lot of my opportunities or future roles that I've had over the years, I think did start with a lot of discretionary effort. So case in point, like, you know, I talked early on about, you know, I did research. 20% of my job was research as a pharmacist. I self-funded myself. It didn't start that way. The sacrifices I made, I was the pharmacist that was coming in at 4:30 in the morning, doing research from 4:30 to 7, then doing my ICU shift and taking care of patients, and then, you know, staying late and doing evenings and weekends and doing research. But that sacrifice eventually led to an opportunity where I could say, hey, I'm going to fund 20% of my time. And I had a department leadership that was very supportive of that. So, you know, that sacrifice was part of it. I think the other thing too, you know, when it comes down to it, that discretionary effort, again, it doesn't have to be necessarily clinical or research. I think about that discretionary effort when I applied for ACPE CE accreditation at Mayo. I mean, that application, I'm not joking, was hundreds of pages long. I did it on my free time. But I wanted to do it for our staff, our pharmacists and pharmacy technicians, so we could have nationally accredited CE. And then, like I said before, you know, 10 years later, I became the director of the school that holds that accreditation at Mayo Clinic. And so that was a long path, an opportunity that took a decade to come to fruition, but it was definitely worth it. And then honestly, it just comes down to, I mean, all those examples I said, you know, were sacrifices to me, my family, and they all led, though, I think, to the opportunities that you questioned of how did those come about. A lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears. This is the answer to it.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. And I want to circle back a little bit, because something you said that just really stood out is the planting seeds early on that you don't know will come to fruition later? So like the ACPE application, then eventually becoming your current position. I think just for me, thinking about as I'm moving into my career and the next steps, is something really important for us postgrads to start thinking about of, we may not see what's on the horizon, but without overwhelming ourselves to do everything under the sun, selecting those opportunities that maybe don't seem like they have anything in the immediate future, but could pay off. And I think this is a good reminder that even something that seems small or one just individual one-off episode could be a great option 10 years from now.
And that was just me following my passion, you know, for pharmacy education and the ACPE CE accreditation. It's like, I wanted to do it to get our staff resources and CE credits that could be used anywhere in the United States. And so there was motivation and there was passion behind it. So if you're early in your career and you're following your passions, that's where the opportunities will eventually open up downstream.
Definitely. And I think with that, a question that we had on our list that I feel a lot of us postgrads would be asking as we move into our career is, how would you personally go about balancing saying yes versus no to opportunities while you're trying to advance your career? Acknowledging we don't want to let go of opportunities, but moving out of residency, we don't want to be doing 100 projects anymore as well.
Yeah, honestly, Tanner, the yes and no to opportunities, it's something that I still struggle with. So by no means, I'm not an expert on this, but I just think that of all the times I've said yes over the years, it's again directly connected to opportunities to advance my career. And so I guess if I could go back in time and offer myself some advice on this particular topic of when to say yes and when to say no, I think I'd probably coach myself into asking a little bit more detailed questions when the person comes forward and asks something of me. I think I'd be more in that, okay, well, let's dig into the details here, because it's easy to ask. But you as a person, you know, if you accept a responsibility, you've got to follow through on it. So questions like, you know, well, how much time per week do you estimate this will take? You know, get at least something to go off. If they say it's 20 hours a week, you're like, I just can't do that right now. You know, I'm too busy as a young clinician. How long will the project last? Is this a 1 month? Is this a 6 month? Is this a 2 year commitment? And so that'll really help you kind of decide whether or not that you can do it. And the other thing is, you know, what are the expected outcomes or deliverables? Like what role do I play in this ask? Like, what are you asking of me to deliver so I'm crystal clear? And you know, if you have the skills and the abilities to deliver it. And so I think those are kind of three questions I think that I would ask up front if I could go back in time and coach myself. You know, as far as the confidence to say no, I felt the same way that you probably do right now as a resident. If you're almost not afraid to say no, but you're just, you know, the whole fear of missing out. I think confidence to say no comes with time, number one. But at the same time, you gotta forecast, you know, 10, 20 years down your own career path, Tanner. If you say no now, well, someday you're going to be the person asking somebody in return for a favor. And so I can guarantee you that, you know, if you say yes sometimes early in your career, it's going to pay huge dividends later on. And I think really, I think better enable you, you know, to be a coach, a mentor to people you're asking favors of, you know, downstream. And then the best advice on this topic of yes, no, actually came from my residency program director. And I asked him this question in residency too of like, you know, yes and no. And it all boils down to work-life balance, right? That's really what we're getting at here is if you say yes to too many things, you will lose work-life balance. And so, you know, there was an analogy and I don't have it word for word, but we were talking about, you know, how, you know, saying yes and no and work-life balance. And the advice I got was, ultimately, you're the person, you know, that has the hands on the steering wheel of this and the brakes, you know, your feet are on the brakes. So if you're the person doing the driving and life's going too fast, pump the brakes. That's the saying the no. If it's not going fast enough, you hit the gas. You know, that's the yes. And he said, but no matter what you do, don't blame others when you spin out of control. And I thought about that. And oftentimes we think about work-life balance, you know, something that we can't control. And the reality is we're the only person that can. We're the person that says yes. We're the person that says no. And so I always think about every opportunity in that context of, is this a break or is this the steering wheel or is this the gas? But no matter what, it's my responsibility.
Yeah, I really like that analogy to think about as we're moving forward in our careers. Because to your point earlier, as a resident, it can be hard to say those no's sometimes, especially because we don't know where our career is going. but at least in the position that I'm in as the PGY2 working to apply for jobs right now, I feel like that's some really good advice for us to take. And any PGY1s who happen to be listening or new grads that are looking at those jobs, that your career might be getting a little bit more streamlined, still having the twists and turns that we talked about earlier, but now you maybe don't have as much input from every side and you could better look at those brakes, pedals, and steering wheels for what they actually might be versus what's your residency project X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely. And then the thing, I mean, everyone spins out of control. I've done it many times, but the good news is there's tow trucks, right? And the tow trucks in life are usually your friends and your mentors. So they're your helpers, you know, but at the end of the day, you are the one driving the car. And that's how I look at that. Maybe it's not as simple as an analogy for some people, but I thought it was really good advice early in my professional career.
I will say I like the addition of the tow truck as well, just to add the extra little wrinkle in there for us to acknowledge too. And at least when you said that, my first thought was even just as a resident, my co-resident, somebody to help me emotionally through it. If I'm having a spin out episode and it's challenging, I have friends that I've developed relationships with I can call on from that perspective, and then as well as mentors and networks outside of that. So I think that's a good poignant point to bring up for that. Our next question that we had was, through this journey, did you ever have to change your mindset? And if you did, how did you approach this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to a certain degree, yeah. I guess, you know, early on, though, I feel like I had such amazing mentors and coaches that I feel like I formed a growth mindset pretty early on because I saw other people who are experienced in doing this. And so I'm sure I had a fixed mindset on some things at some point in my life, but at the same time, I think about, you know, back to my, you know, my journey, you know, so I undergrad in chemistry and mathematics and then went to pharmacy school. And honestly, Tanner, I learned failure pretty quickly because I was not the smartest student in the class. You know, I had to work. I feel like sometimes I had to work twice as hard, you know, to get, you know, the same grade as maybe some of my friends or colleagues. And so I guess if you fail a lot, you just get used to that growth mindset. I'm like, all right, I make mistakes, you know, no big deal. You bounce back quick. And the most important thing, though, is, you know, what do you learn from those mistakes? And so I realized that and talking to my mentors who were, you know, well along in their professional careers is, you know, that's completely normal to make mistakes and to learn from those mistakes. That's why you're doing this. And so I feel like I really wrap my head around, you know, the mindset of growth mindset and being comfortable with failing was something that I was cool with. One area that I was not really prepared for is how to go from a staff member to a manager and then eventually as an administrator. And really what I'm talking about is, you know, how do you develop yourself into a leader? Pharmacy school is awesome, you know, by teaching pharmacology, and, you know, residency is awesome by teaching being a clinician and an educator and a research, but not always the greatest at developing leaders. And I think that's something where in the pharmacy profession, you know, there isn't a ton of leadership development, you know, in residency, there's not a lot of time for it. And so I really, really had to work on that. What I realized early on, and this is going to shock you, Tanner, not everyone has the same personality as me. I am a true critical care pharmacist. I'm like, you know, I'm influential and I like to make quick decisions, like bedside decisions. Like if you can't drip it in through an IV, it's not a drug. That's my mentality. And so when I had that mindset and then moved over into a leadership role as a manager, I quickly realized that many of my colleagues on committees or work groups, they were not like that at all. They were more of the, okay, I want to hear the information. I want to ask a ton of questions, and then I want to walk away from this meeting and think about it and then come back and ask some more questions. And for me, I'm just like, let's make a decision already. And so over time, I actually began to appreciate those personalities, and they're actually the perfect match for my leadership style because they balance me out. In fact, I like their approach better than my own because I know they're my check and balance. So I don't make quick decisions without thinking it through, you know, very thoughtfully. So I think that was the one area that I've had to really change my mindset was my leadership style and kind of my approach to leadership. So my advice to you and your colleagues, you know, in residency right now is start reading leadership development books now. And I know that's not very appealing when you're thinking about reading journal articles or whatever, but if you go on vacation and you're unwinding, grab a leadership development book and start reading them now. Leadership will find you no matter what role you are in pharmacy.
Yeah, thank you for that, Garrett. That's initially when I sent these questions, we did talk about fixed versus growth mindset. But I think the addition of the mindset from clinician to management or administration, given the twists and turns you've presented, is something I agree that maybe pharmacy school doesn't always prepare us for, and something that for those of us that want to continue advancing our career, that is something that we need to keep on the radar. So that was a very interesting and appreciated point. One quick tangent, I guess, is from a leadership book, any recommendations for a first book for somebody to pick up if they haven't started this journey of leadership development?
Good question. I've got three favorite. I'm not going to give you one. I've got three. They're for different reasons, honestly. The very first leadership book I ever read was Good to Great by Jim Collins. I love it. There are so, I mean, that book is almost falling apart. I've read it so much and underlined stuff and you know, bent the pages to remember stuff. So Good to Great by Jim Collins. I love that one. Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek is another favorite book. And actually one I just read was Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. And all three of them I like for different reasons. And there's some things in those books that I'm like, yeah, maybe I don't 100% agree with that. But overall, I would say the themes of the book really struck me as a pharmacist and now administrator and how I lead my teams.
And I think looking back from that as well, for those of us that are developing our leadership skills and getting ready for growth and to advance, looking back, even whether it's on your resident self or for the time when you were still an ICU pharmacist before moving to leadership, are there any skills or any advice you'd give to yourself in that window about developing leadership within a clinical team?
Yeah, boy, I think some of it is just insert yourself, find role models, and be okay with making mistakes, and don't be afraid to apologize. I think that's one thing, even the most senior leaders, I think the individuals that, you know, can apologize and say, you know, I didn't see it that way, or I made a mistake. I think that makes you more relatable. And I think it makes staff more comfortable to approach you, you know, as a peer, rather than, you know, creating an environment or a culture, you know, where they don't think they can fail. And so I think that would be my best recommendation there is, you know, be real.
Definitely. No, I like that too, just to be the, trying to think of the wording myself, but kind of be a leader from within and be that source of connection or be real for people. I do think that's something I've seen is from individuals that I admire within clinical pharmacy. So something I hope to aspire to be, and I hope others do as well. And so I think that rounds out most of the questions that we had today that we specifically wanted to talk to you about, Garrett, when it comes to career advancement. So before I send us off, are there any final words you wanted to send all of the post-grads out to?
Well, I just, one, thanks again for the opportunity. It's always fun to connect with my peers from ACCP. I think the only other, I guess, recommendation I could make is the importance of networking early in your professional career. And that's not just within the walls of your organization. It's also our professional organizations. I can't tell you how big of an impact networking has had for me personally and how that opened up career opportunities. You know, I've done stuff locally at a state level. I've done stuff nationally. And I think about, for example, my time in ACCP and, you know, the easiest way to network is to volunteer or to, you know, just put your name out there, you know, bother somebody. And before you know it, like my career path through ACCP was getting involved with, you know, Emerge from the Crowd. And then eventually that led to, you know, authoring or co-authoring book chapters, you know, for the field guide, you know, for residents. And just the opportunity to work with the ACCP staff like Carrie Sims and others. And then to meet every single year on that program, you get to meet a brand new crop of students who have a ton of questions. And they look to you for advice. And I think it's actually so important to do networking like that professionally. It's a struggle. Sometimes people say, well, geez, I don't have the money or I don't have the time or whatever. But I can guarantee you the relationships that I've formed through professional organizations have either led to future research collaborations, you know, future opportunities, colleagues maybe joining me at Mayo Clinic or wherever it may be. So don't discount the importance, I think, of that connection like you're already doing, you know, with this program. networking professionally is imperative so you can get your name out there outside your four walls of the institution you work at.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it goes back to, like you said, I know it's a cliche, but pharmacy is a small world.
It is.
And so even in my short period, I've not networked nearly as much as you have, Garrett, but even being able to connect with people across the country, even in just the technically 6 years, including pharmacy school now, that I've met over that time is remarkable. So I can only imagine how many people you know across the country and across the world for that matter. But I can see where that comes into play later on down the road, and definitely something that I hope to continue pursuing. And I hope those listening take your advice and continue pursuing that as well, just to continue meeting people and making our family a strong family.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And don't worry about opportunities. They're kind of like boomerangs. They'll come back eventually.
Thank you for listening to an ACCP podcast for residents by residents. Our theme music is titled Jupiter Smile by the 126ers and is provided through YouTube's free audio library. Please subscribe to the ACCP podcast to be notified of new episodes. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.